The John Anik and Kenny Florian Podcast. John Anik and Kenny Florian.
I fucking love them. I can't get enough of them.
Let's hear that Boston next.
Big jab there from Duffy and Frank Mir is hurt now. Down goes Duffy out cold. Frank Mir does it again. Rock'em sock'em robots here. Oh my goodness.
Hyperbole.
They're a couple of absolutely self-involved bullshit artists.
Here are your hosts, John Anik and Kenny Florian.
Big show forthcoming today, Sunday, April 10th, 2022. It's episode 344 of the Anik and Florian podcast. And you knew you weren't going to have to wait for the Ray Longo minute today. Man. Feels like a three-time championship celebration Sunday morning, doesn't it? Congratulations, Aljamain Sterling. Still undisputed UFC bantamweight champion of the world.
John, I got to tell you, it's getting a little boring, no?
Are you fucking kidding me? Boring.
Holy shit, man. I'm on fire. I'm so proud of this guy. It was a great night. And, man, hats off to Petrie, man. Where is this guy? Bring him on.
Yeah, we'll talk.
Because I got to tell you, I think I was betting against Aljo until I heard this kid last week. He turned me around. It's right, crazy. So
at 12:30 p.m. Eastern, we will bring on Big Gun Brian Petrie, and you guys can have 10 minutes together. And I guess the next challenge for Ray Longo, Ken Flo, is going to be to find a fighter now born in the 2000s and try to turn him into an undisputed UFC champion. Congratulations, yeah. My man. You know, it's emotional, obviously, for us because we're all so close to you. But it's Aljamain Sterling by split decision. I really don't care much for the discourse about the scorecards. I mean, certainly we're going to get into it, but the bottom line is that Petr Yan is not a 5-1 favorite over Aljamain Sterling. They are very competitive together. Aljamain Sterling has a grappling advantage. You guys used it to great effect. And bottom line, the enormity of this win for Aljo, it's just got to feel like the biggest monkey off your back, like in UFC history, I would think.
No, man. You know what? I got to tell you, man, it's, you know, like we've always talked about this. It's not like a baseball game or a basketball game where you something goes wrong and you get to do it over the next week or the next day. Or 13 months of just getting tortured. And look, nobody liked the way that last fight went down. You know, I swear I didn't know what the rules were. I thought he got kneed. I didn't want to see him fighting, you know, continuing the fight. Whatever happened, happened. But, you know, I had put a space up between Matt Serra and Chris Weidman probably about 14 months ago, and I would just make them stare at the space. That's where you're going to be. And, you know, I felt so, you know, just to motivate him. And I felt so bad about what happened after the fight. Like, I didn't even put the picture up until last week. And I called him and I surprised him. I said, look, man, you earned your right for the last fight. I don't like the way it went down. I really just want to see you.
Sorry, my mic is muted, but explain that a little bit, Ray, because you have pictures of the champions on the wall.
Yeah, so I have pictures of all the guys that fight in the UFC on the wall, but on the top is Matt Serra and Chris Weidman because they're the champions and with their belts. So before the fight, I was watching some documentary. I think Doc Rivers did something with a basketball team where he just let them look at like where the banner would be every day and just visualize. So I thought that was a great idea. I did it with Aljo. I opened up space for where his poster would be, move from the bottom to the top, you know, when he was champion last year, you know, for the title last year. And the way it went down, I mean, even as a coach, I love the guy. I didn't even like that. So, I mean, I never really put his picture up there, you know, always recognized him as the champ and stuff. But, you know, 2 weeks ago, we opened up that space again and said, look, Aljo, we put your picture up. I mean, I put his picture up there because I go, you are the champ. You did earn your right to be there, and I just wanted to see him win it the right way, and he went out and won it the right way for me. I was so proud. I think, you know, 1, 2, and 3, easy rounds to score. Second round, possibly a 10-8, you know, based on control time, and, you know, he's always in danger. I you know, can't believe he didn't get the finish. I thought it was a done deal. But the way he controlled John, it was, I don't know, Kenny, you could talk to that even more than me, but I thought it was beautiful.
How would you rate this win? Obviously, you know, you spoke about your previous champions. Based on the history between Yan and Aljo and everything that was going on in the background with, you know, surgeries and injuries and all that, where would you rate this as far as satisfaction after a win?
No, this is – look, I'm going to tell you, I learned a lot as a coach from this fight too. I mean, Aljo's different. He's different from Matt and Chris for sure. And he, you know, even like with the last fight when he didn't eat right, and I was like, I sat down, I said, Aljo, you're telling me the truth. You really felt like shit. You didn't eat because, you know, you've been doing this a long time and, you know, I get it, but, you know, whatever, you know, and I really believed him. He told me, Ray, I swear to God, that was it. I didn't feel good. And I knew, I said, if you didn't feel good and you did what you did in that last fight, I know we're winning this fight, you know? So, That was it. So this one was a great feeling because the emotion involved too, Kenny, even with all the shit that transpired in the year and, you know, this guy threatening to kill us when he sees us. And, you know, I mean, dude, don't be doing that shit. It's stupid. It's nonsense. And I got to tell you, you're going to threaten us in our own, in our backyard. You got to be a complete idiot. You know, so, but it was, the tensions were high with that. You know, you got to take everything serious. It ain't a fucking joke. I don't like getting threatened. I never did, and I never will. You know,
So you went right to the scoring. There's so much to talk about before we even get to the scoring. So I'm not going to get there. You know, if you think I'm just going to let you get away with telling me that round one wasn't a hard round to score, but Ray. There's so much I want to get to before we get to, let me just get to
super proud of Aljo because of the buildup to this fight. It was very emotional. And again, he had to sit there and let all of these assholes torture him for 13 months. So it was, this one was sad. All of these fights are satisfying for different reasons. You know what I mean? Yeah. And so I think that's the answer to your question. Because of this, the way that first fight played out, this one is really, really satisfying. Really satisfying.
This rivalry has a circumstance that no other one does in UFC history, insofar as an undisputed UFC title changed hands on a DQ, on a foul, right? Mm-hmm. And I was on SureDog.com, and it was finally the line that I was looking for, right? That Aljamain Sterling absorbed all of the public's wrath for Jan's foul. It's a crazy sort of statement on the rivalry, right? And as such, a not an inherently popular fighter to begin with. I mean, he has his fans, right? He has his fan base. Every fighter does, but you know, it's just absurd, right? It really is. And you know, I like Piotr Jan a lot. I really do. You know, I don't think this was his best night, but it's hard not to be happy for Aljamain Sterling. And I just can't even imagine, you know how big dick swinging he is on a Sunday. I'm sorry, kids. You know, I mean.
Yeah, I mean, well, he had so many doubters. He had so many people who doubted his ability to win. He had a lot of people who doubted that he was even injured in that fight, you know, for their own selfish reasons. They just wanted to see the fight play out. They didn't want to see it go down that way. And, you know, Aljo, the way that he was able to battle back and win this fight, and I think it's extremely impressive, just based on everything that he had to deal with, you know, from the weight cut to the injury, coming back and believing in himself and all the negativity around his victory.
Absolutely.
It's just very impressive.
Yeah.
Aljamain Sterling, 21-3 overall, undefeated since 2017, 7-0 since the Mud Ice fight. 13-3 in the UFC since 2014, and his head coach wants to talk about scorecards and drag me into a morass of negativity about how this fight was scored.
No,
I want to celebrate Aljo a little bit, the way we're going to
celebrate
Alexander Volkanovski, you know, because, you know, I want to talk about rounds 4 and 5 and everything, you know, but I think for Aljamain Sterling with his grappling ability, Ken Flo, I guess I'm just curious, like, not 10-8 rounds for me. I can't even help myself, I guess, because, you know, there wasn't necessarily a submission attempt, and I thought Jan defended well. But human backpack, man, I mean, he gets on there. The control time just is going to pile up, and you're not going to be able to get him off.
That was clear. I mean, once he got on the back, you could see Jan was doing a good job of defending submissions, but it was clear he really wasn't going to get him off, or at least wasn't going to get him off easily. Aljo did a great job of controlling that body triangle. He chipped away at him when he needed to. He was able to get him belly down a bunch. But again, let's look at in the grappling world. You mount someone back or front. That is a dominant position. That is the most dominant position that you can achieve in grappling.
Yeah.
He didn't get the submissions in, but you know, if we were to equate that to the striking game, that's about as good as it gets. It was definitely close to a 10-8 round. So I was really curious to see how that was going to play out if that was the case, because the majority of that round, Jan is defending. He's not doing anything offensively.
Right.
Literally, he can't. He's encircled by his enemy, right?
Yeah, I guess it's just inevitable. I guess let's just talk about it, Ray. Let's start with round one. Why was that an easy round for you to score?
I thought Aljo, the movement, he had Jan. I don't think Jan did much in that round. I liked the way Aljo was getting a read on him. He kept moving. Right. He was pot-shotting him with his kicks. And I thought that was an easy round to score, I think. Unless you like Petr Yan, then you could start making that. That's where it gets tricky.
The whole fight hinged upon round one.
Yeah,
I mean, 4 and 5 were clear for Petr Yan, and I think sometimes, Kenny, when you know the guy who doesn't win has won the last two rounds, sometimes that can sort of affect the public perception of the fight. I mean, Kenflo, dare I ask, like, how you scored round one in the fight?
Yeah, listen, I actually thought rounds 1 and 5 were pretty close. I didn't necessarily think it was clear for Jan in round 5 either. He probably won round 5, but that could have gone either way. That wouldn't have been out of the question for me, in my opinion, just based on Aljo, you know, initiating on the feet. He was trying to hit some takedowns. He was close to a few of those. The only thing Jan did at the end, I think that kind of was clear, was when he kind of pushed his head down to the mat after the sprawl and circled to his back, but he didn't really do much to Aljo from there. Right. Prior to that, I thought Aljo was the aggressor, but in round one, I thought that was really close. You know, I thought that one could have gone either way as well. I thought, you know, early it was Jan kind of, stalking, but he wasn't really landing many punches either. It wasn't landing such clear shots. Aljo was kind of being more evasive, was landing shots and then kind of moving away. So I don't know. I mean, I don't have a problem with the decision at all, obviously,
right.
But it was close enough to where I think people, you know, who definitely, you know, were in favor of Jan are going to think that Jan won the fight. But in no way, shape or form is that a robbery. I mean,
Ray, I remain very confused with the scoring, right? It seems like even when it got to a point where they wanted to be more liberal with the 10-8s, you know, now they're not there anymore. Kenny, I guess what I struggle with is that I thought round one was exceedingly close. And as a commentator, if I didn't have the benefit of the numbers, maybe I would have thought Petr Yan won that round. But Ray, the problem for me and Kenflo is that if round one is scored 10-9 to either fighter, 10-9 numerically doesn't work for round two, given how dominant I thought Aljamain Sterling was.
Right. That's a really good point.
And some people would say to me, Aljo, you know, he didn't really get anything done. And to Kenflo's point, it's like he rendered the other fighter defensive for the entire round, you know, and had a body triangle, you know, so don't tell me he didn't do anything. I guess I just struggle with, like, I need somebody to just tell me, like, and I guess basically this is what I've gleaned since we got off the air, Ray, is that if you have to ask yourself, and I want people to listen to this. This is from Sean Sheehan, great Irish journalist. We're going to have him on the program. If you are having trouble discerning whether or not it is a 10-8, it's a 10-9, right? So if in your head you're struggling with it, you're supposed to say it's a 10-9. And I'm not sure that even works, but I guess that's the way we're supposed to operate. But it's neither here nor there. It really doesn't matter at this point in time. You know, he closes this chapter enough so that there is absolutely no groundswell looking for a trilogy fight. It's on to TJ Dillashaw. What were your thoughts on rounds 4 and 5? Go ahead.
Yeah, let me just say, but at the end of the day, we did see a different Aljamain Sterling. No, that's all that matters to me. He backed up what he said. He was a different fighter. And that's it. You know what I mean? It could have been close, but I just thought he controlled what was happening, and that was it. But go ahead. 4 and 5. Yeah. Disappointing to me, but like Kenny said, 5 wasn't a complete runaway by no means. And it wasn't like he was taking any, he wasn't taking much damage either.
Right.
So,
no doubt.
You know, he's not banged up today.
I'm banged up today. I just spilled my Stay coffee all over
my desk. My wife just brought me two towels. I drove through the night from Jacksonville.
I feel
for
you.
Like 2 hours because I feel revolved around you. And I asked you what time you wanted to go. And here's Longo's day, right? He wanted to go at noon. Then he's going to go for a leisurely lunch. He's going to come back and pack. And he's going to get on a 6:30 p.m. flight. I'm thinking, can we not go at 3 p.m. Eastern, right? You know?
When it gets too close, I get nervous. I just want to get out of here.
No, I get it. But my desk is a mess. So I'm going to clean sort of here.
In all honesty, I booked a later flight because I thought we were going to do the show together. The next morning.
Oh my God. That's what we should have done. I mean, heaven forbid we think ahead in the seventh year. What an embarrassment. So, well, congratulations, man. And I know a lot of people are trying to put your career in historic terms right now, but I just want to go back to the poster thing, Kenny, for a minute, because it's very symbolic, you know? And I know, Kenny, for you, you probably would have been like, don't put my fucking picture up there until I get some finality on this series, you know? But I just think that, you know, a lot of MMA websites might sort of pick up on that because it's a really cool thing that, you know, that you sort of held back in terms of giving him that acknowledgement. Then you gave him that acknowledgement on the wall before this fight. And then, you know, he puts a capstone on it with that type of win. What were the moments like for you guys in the team after the fight, brother?
Listen, what I see, and again, look, I'm extremely happy he did his whole camp here. Mirab Davalishvili, there's not a better teammate than this guy. There's just not. He is, look, they're in the same weight class. He was all about helping Aljo. And I want to really, this fight really had nothing to do with me, basically. I mean, Al Biaquinta, Dennis Bazooka, and Mirab Davalishvili did a great job. They gelled together. I think Aljo really, you know, these guys are really tight. And that's part of the whole thing. Like, I don't get the jumping all over the place in different training. I think there's something to be said about the camaraderie that you build, and that when you're going into battle, you got guys behind you that you know really have your back. And I mean, even, you know, with the pre-fight shit, I mean, these guys were tight. And I just want to say they did an unbelievable fucking job. What I watched was just amazing to me. And look, man, I'm getting older, so I'd like to sit back a little more and just, you know, observe. And it was absolutely phenomenal. I knew he was going to win that fight. I knew he wanted to win that fight even for those guys, man, because they just, the work they put in and the time and, you know, I haven't felt that confident going into a fight in a long time.
Yeah. I mean, it reminds me of like Usman over Covington in terms of how good a win must feel. And again, I thought it was a close fight when Ray's not on the air. I think Kenny and I are going to dig a little bit deeper into that side of things. But I'm just really happy for you. I really am. And for Aljamain and for the family. And he's a good kid, you know, and it's hard, I think, to, you know, absorb a lot of the venom. You know, Ray, can you tell our audience the story about his mom calling him on Thursday night and looking at the building?
I mean, that was to me was a sign from the heavens. Like, his mom calls last minute. So I don't know if it was the day before the weigh-in, but he was already like wigging out
Thursday.
A little bit. Was it Thursday? Yeah.
Yep.
And I said, Al, you got to get it here any way you can, man. I don't know. Never came to a fight before. The first fight you want to come to. So I go, I don't know. For me, I'm just weird. I go, I don't care how you get it here. Just get it here. Because I think that was huge. Yeah. You know what I mean? So what a nice moment that was. He had his sisters here. He had his mom here. His friends are fucking awesome. They were here. Yeah. You know, you just felt it. You know, you start to feel it, Kenny, like, man, the energy is just going in the right direction. Let me give you another really good story, John. You'll appreciate that I didn't tell you. So I'm on the plane coming here, and there's a drunk idiot. This isn't going to go good either, but this guy is talking. I bet $1 million. You know, Aljo's going to get knocked out in the first round.
Get the fuck out of here.
Oh, no, we're sitting in first class. I'm like, I think this shit ain't going to go good.
No.
He was one of these guys. Then somebody goes, well, what are you doing? I'm going to the fights. Dana White's my second cousin. He gets me tickets all to pay. I go, this motherfucker is just out of his mind, completely gone. So I guess when we get off the plane, I take my mask off. I'm at the carriage thing, get my bag. So his friend must realize now I'm Aljo's trainer.
Wow.
You know, things change a little bit, right? So he says, can I just talk to you? Can I show you something? So you know what? He shows me a parlay. It's like an 11, right. I'm not 11, like baseball games, but whatever the hell's in there. The last two are Petey Yan and Volkanovski. $6,000, he wins $1 million.
You're telling me all the baseball games had already come in, and he just
everything came in, so he was down to that. Wow. I'm not really
in that situation. You know what you do? You hedge. Yeah.
So listen, I go like this. I go, listen, you're losing. You're not winning. Aljo looks great. He's had a guy. That guy's he's good. Now he's now it's like a different. Please don't say that. You're getting me crazy. You know, blah blah blah. So I go. That became the running joke. So yeah. So supposedly, I seen him in a hotel. And he wasn't drunk. He was actually a nice guy. I liked him. I go, dude, you got to stop drinking, man. That was a bad look on the plane, right? So he said he hedged or did something or cashed out for like 200. It was either $1 million or $200,000.
Yeah, you got to do
something. So I think. But then his friend told me when I saw him after the fight, he goes, I don't believe he did it. He said he did it, but I don't know if he did because the guy was miserable. He came up to me. He says, let's be honest. Aljo didn't win the fight. I go, dude, let me tell you something. I can't even tell you what I said, but whatever I said, you did that.
I want to know.
No,
I'll
tell
you.
No. It wasn't even like that. It was something about, I just said, look, I'm not going to be able to save you if you fucking keep talking like that because, you know, that tensions were high. That's all
I'm
saying.
I'll tell you, I'm sitting on a ticket right now. Scottie Scheffler has, I think, a 3-shot lead at the Masters, and I'm sitting on a ticket for him at 22-1.
Wow.
So I will hedge today on Cameron Smith, who I think has a great chance to beat him because Cameron Smith just makes a lot of fucking birdies. So I'm in the same situation, albeit not nearly on those terms with hundreds of thousands of dollars. Is somebody cutting up some cocaine or something? What is that?
No, did you hear that? Wait, John.
I know.
Well, what is that? Wait, give me one second.
Not that I know what
give
that
me one sec. Give
sound
me one sec.
Is, you know? Oh, please tell me. Oh, yeah, he's going to bring in some mixed martial arts royalty here, hopefully. 48-47 Yan for me, by the way, while he's off his cans. I thought Piotr Yan won the fight, but it doesn't even matter. Cody's going to fucking kill me. I'm happy for Cody, of course, the producer of the Weekly Scraps, Aljamain Sterling's podcast, Ken Flo. But I thought Piotr Yan won rounds 4 and 5, and I did think he won round 1. And certainly if I didn't have the benefit of the stats, I'll stop talking about this when Ray comes back on the cans. But if I didn't have the benefit of the stats, I would have given Yan 1, 4, and 5. But close fight. Right. I just think it's like you got to be careful, man. It's like that outcome hung in the balance late. You know, it really did.
Totally.
Ray.
Oh, sorry about that.
What's
Holy
up? Who was that? I thought you were going to bring in like Raging Ally and Quinter or something.
I told everybody at 12, but I don't even think
that's all right.
Up.
That's okay. That's fine. all right. Anything that I'm sort of forgetting with the Hall of Fame coach Ray Longo, you got to be in a Hall of Fame at this point. Kenny, are you in any Hall of Fames yet?
No, just some Massachusetts Hall of Fame or something.
Whoa. He just said no, just some Massachusetts Hall of Fame. Wait. Let me ask the question again. So, yes, you are in some sort of Hall of Fame, Kenny. Is that right?
Yeah. Because
I'm not in any Massachusetts Hall of Fame, and I was born in Massachusetts. What Hall of Fame are you in again, Kenny?
It's some martial arts.
Okay, so Kenny's a Hall of Famer. Ray, are you in any Hall of Fame?
I would have been in a couple, but I denied them. I really don't like that. Well, it's got to be like Kenny's saying, like, I'm in the freaking Williston Park Hall of Fame. Like, it's got to be something.
Why would you guys denigrate? You know,
no,
you could put me in the Anik and Florian Podcast Hall of Fame, and I would.
Then you're that type of guy.
I've never won anything in my life. I got a couple of 5 years of service awards over there. Service from the Ultimate Fighting Championship.
It's got to be an organization of meaning.
Well, you're a Hall of Famer in my mind, and please pass along my congratulations to Aljamain Sterling. And we will do on that from Ken Flo later. In the nature of time, I will ask you about Khamzat Chimaev and Gilbert Burns. Obviously, that was right before your fight, so I don't know how much of that you watched. I watched the whole thing.
I'm going to tell you, if you're not a Gilbert Burns fan, after that fight, you'll never be a Gilbert Burns fan. I think Gilbert, what a great job he did in that fight, man. And he kind of, you know, exposed. I mean, Khamzat, look, he came to fight. He took his shots. I think it's a great growing fight for him moving up. But he definitely derailed him for what I didn't see that fight going like that. You know, even I told Gilbert, I was worried about you, but man, I think you're the, I thought he fought with heart and balls, and he, you know, he definitely wobbled him a couple of times, and I thought it was even going into the third round. I mean, that was a good fight, man. That was a great fight.
Kenny, I want to get Gilbert Burns' face like tattooed on my body this morning. Maybe I'll do a Brazilian flag. What'd you make of Gilbert Burns just with a spirited effort in defeat?
That is one of those fights that both men found out a little bit more about themselves than they did before that fight, right? Mm-hmm. I think for Gilbert Burns, he's been looking for that warrior type performance. And even in defeat, I think gained so much, not only fans, but, you know,
absolutely, man. I was coming out of my skin watching that fight. That was fantastic.
Yeah. And it wasn't going well for him in round one. Like, he had to do so much, in order to come back. And in round two, he absolutely did that. That alone was a huge victory. And then, you know, keeping it competitive like he did in round three and, you know, avoiding a lot of the very difficult positions that he was put in round one. I mean, I was amazed by the performance. Gilbert Burns is the number two ranked fighter in the world for a reason. He fought his ass off. I didn't think emotionally he looked like he was in that great of a space when he walked out. He almost looked scared. But boy, did he turn things around and landed some huge shots. That right hand that he landed at the end of round two would have killed most men. If you go back and look at that punch, it was as perfect as you could throw. It was as hard as Gilbert Burns has ever thrown in his life. Mm-hmm. And how that didn't knock out that man, I have no idea.
Amazing.
An absolute classic war of a fight. And both men should be applauded.
Without absolutely. Amazed. Yeah, Kamzat definitely had a pair of whiskers on him for sure. I mean, I think
unreal,
it's going to be,
that part,
you know, I think that'll be a huge fight for Kamzat moving forward, because he had to do things that he had never had to do before either. So,
My
theory at the end of that round, too, remember when Gilbert and I kind of pushed him off and then Hamzat kind of swung him at the end?
Yeah.
My theory is that he was kind of out. I think he was laying on him because he didn't really know where he was.
Wow.
I think that's what happened.
Go back and watch it.
He looked hurt, dude. It was bad.
Yeah.
By the way, if you're audio only today, there are levels to society. As I sit here sort of draped in coffee all over my desk, Ken Flo is getting like beautifully manicured coffee mugs, hot as hell, delivered to his office studio. Wow. I would like to read a quote for you from JC Santana, my strength and conditioning coach from the Institute of Human Performance, Gilbert Burns' coach, and I wanted to get your thoughts on it. What about the adversity Gilbert overcame? Gilbert fought two forces, Khamzat and the hype. Gilbert bruised up the guy who was supposed to wipe the floor with him. If you look at the odds, everyone should be interviewing Gilbert, asking him how he was able to take the monster who was supposed to smash him in the first round to the edge. I mean, did you see Khamzat's face? The guy who has more rounds than punches landed on him got a taste of humanity today, or maybe that was humility. I don't think it meant to be humility. And that was not Gilbert's best performance. Like, I love the quote from JC Santana, and it really is amazing. Like, I'm just so glad we got to learn all of that, you know, and that, you know, we didn't, you know, we got 15 minutes, an epic fight, probably the fight of the year, Ray. What do you think about that from one of Gilbert's coaches?
Yeah, I think he's pretty dead on with that. And I think I'm in agreement. I tell when I saw him, I said, I really was worried for you. I thought this guy, that round one, you know, wasn't looking too good. And the way he came back, he did have to fight through a couple of different things. But man, did he, I mean, I even in the backstage, I know people were coming up to him like, what a great fight. I mean, like normal people. He was just really, really good to see. And I'm happy for him. He had his kids with him, his wife with him. Just a great scene. Henry, you know, one of my favorite guys. That was great, man. That was great. You know,
Kenny, Gilbert. Sorry, Ray. No, that's my fault. I'm cutting you off because I'm underslept. No. So, Kenny, I think Gilbert Burns would be a great training partner for Khamzat Chimaev, you know, because he doesn't have a lot of guys that are, you know, welterweight size, even though Gilbert's a little bit undersized, that he can train with. So he was surprised at how durable and strong Gilbert was. And I think a lot of us wanted to see that. But sometimes for me, the expectations for these athletes are way too high, even for somebody like Ian Garry, as if you're supposed to just be Conor McGregor, who's one of the greatest distance managers of all time. Like Ian Garry's just supposed to come out and dust everybody in a minute. You know, it's not always going to play out that way. And so when Ray says that, like, the hype is derailed for Khamzat, you know, I don't know. I guess I just don't see it that way. You're not right. Yet. I mean, if he had gotten knocked out Ray in round two, like.
Right. I'll take that back. Not the hype, but it's almost like the Tyson factor. You could see he's beatable now. That's all. Not the hype. I think it's a great fight for Khamzat too. I think he grows from that fight tremendously and he makes some adjustments. I think he's 100% going to get better. There's no question in my mind. But what I meant by hype was that how he was just dominating. He was so dominant in his wins, you know, that kind of got derailed. You know, now he's a human being who's just a tough motherfucker who loves to fight. I mean, there's no question about that. I didn't mean any disrespect the hype. It was more like the hype of what he's been doing so far.
Well, that's the thing. I think for Khamzat, he has walked through so many guys. We were going to find out potentially before this fight if he was the real deal or not. You know, hey, it's easy when you're the hammer. Can you be the nail? Right. And I think the question was answered. He can be the nail as well. He isn't just a guy that's good at beating you up. He could take a beating as well. He had to go through some serious gut checks in this one. And I agree with Ray in that. We see vulnerabilities in Chimaev.
Right.
He isn't this indestructible force, but is he a damn good fighter?
Yes.
Yeah, he's a damn good fighter. And he's got heart and determination to back it up. Like you could tell he genuinely wanted to experience a war. He loved it. He loved every second of it. And for anyone who's like, oh, but if you just hit him once, like Tyson, if you were able to hit him, you could see, you know, it hit him hard and hit him again. He could fade over the course of a fight. Chimaev was not trying to fade. If anything, his coach had to be like, hey, stop trying to brawl, you idiot. What are you doing? You know, go back to your wrestling. Be a technical fighter. Because he was brawling and he was getting hit with some big shots from Gilbert Burns.
I talked to his coach briefly. He said he just really wanted him to use the jab more. It was so effective. Mm-hmm. And why, Kenny said. No, Kenny's articulate better than me. My point was just the way he's been, because he's definitely a warrior. I'm not remotely saying that there's no hype, but my thing is, before this fight, if you would have said him against Kamaru Usman, we would have been saying something different than we're going to say today. That's absolutely all I'm saying. Right or wrong? Is that agreed upon? All I'm saying. You know, I had him, you know, in your head, you see what he's doing. He's killing everybody, but now it's different. Right now we got some resistance, but I thought he handled the resistance great too. And I thought Gilbert did a great thing, just like JC said, what he was up against, how he had to dig down deep and fight, especially after a first round like that against a guy with all that hype. It makes that fight more special to me.
Yeah.
So again, hats off to Gilbert Burns, but hats off to Khamzat too. The guy was fantastic also. It has nothing to do with anything, you know.
Ray, I got to ask you, as a coach, you know, I guess for me, I would love to see it. But for you, wouldn't you rather see Khamzat in this kind of fight? If you're getting ready for a Kamaru Usman, wouldn't you rather him be in this kind of war, knowing that your fighter can do crazy things like that when needs to, and know that he's got the heart, than maybe just walk through everybody on your way to the championship?
That's what I say. This fight was huge for Khamzat because now we know he could take it too. You know what I'm saying? So he's only going to get way better from this fight.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I think Gilbert found out a lot about himself, like you guys say, who he is. But this kid's a 27 years old, right? Yeah. So he's growing. And this is a growing fight for him. He probably made some mistakes as far as brawling instead of, you know, staying behind the jab and doing some other things, but he's going to get better and better, this kid. But that my point was, before this fight, we would have had him
going up against anybody.
And now I'm going to say he's got to get one or two more fights before we start talking like that again. And it's going to get tougher now because people know, you know, they got to take him three rounds. We never seen the guy come out of the first round. Right. So there's a lot of questions, a lot of moving parts that I thought were answered beautifully on both sides.
Yeah, I mean, Gilbert Burns might be one of the top 20 best pound for pound fighters in the world, you know, with a number two next to his name that Hamzat did just take, and the resolve that Chimaev showed in that third round after that seemingly concussive blow in round two should not be ignored. But, you know, people who want to, like, you know, those who are on the Chimaev hype train, right, and on that bandwagon, and you can count me among them, you know, those that want to knock those people down today, I think it's just silly. Like, I'm looking to sort of celebrate both sides of this. And obviously, I do consider Gilbert Burns a teammate, if I can say that. You know, I'm just happy to see him shine in this setting. And he just wants it so badly. I do think that eventually, you know, Gilbert Burns somehow, some way, interim or otherwise, is going to be wrapped with a championship belt. So at the request of Ray Longo, we are now going to welcome in the fourth member of our team. He is Big Gun Brian.
My man. There he is.
What's up, Ray?
Let me tell you, so bring that energy, Petrie.
Let's go, Ray.
Listen, you know, I told John, I don't really, I never listen to the show because I don't, I don't listen to myself. I can't stand listening to myself. So a buddy of mine said, you got to listen to this guy, Petrie. He's had some nice things to say about you. I didn't even know who you were, but man, dude, you knocked it out of the park, man. You got energy that I think you're going to be successful, you know, in anything you do in life. But man, you're on the money, man. I love what you're doing, and just keep it up, man. I just wanted to say hello. And
hey, I appreciate that, Ray. Congratulations, man. That's huge. Yeah. I had 1, 2, 3 pretty easy Aljo, maybe even 10-8 in there. So we got champ, baby. I love it. Let's go, Ray.
So that was it, man. But anyway, man, keep doing your thing, guys. I love you. We have anything
else? Ray.
Yeah,
this is, I just want to say this in closing. I don't know, Kenny, if you had anything else for Ray. You can invoice us for the show today. We will pay you whatever you want for today's episode.
Wow, I tell you.
And lastly, I'll just say, when we were launching this podcast in April of 2015, I believe it was January of 2015, if I'm not mistaken, I pulled Ray Longo aside at a weigh-in or some fight week festivity, and I pitched him the Ray Longo Minute to be a part of this show. And I'm not trying to toot my own horn, but, you know, it's pretty cool that here we are 7 years in and you're bringing this program an undisputed UFC championship. And certainly you did that last March, but it was anticlimactic. So I would just like to thank you on behalf of the listenership, and keep getting it done, man. You know, we're happy for you, man.
I don't know how much more I got me, guys. I'll be honest with you. These are getting tough, Kenny.
Right. But, thank you very much. It's amazing to see, man. And again, it just kind of is another demonstration of your passion as a martial artist and as a coach, and for you to be able to take us along for the ride. It's been awesome, man. Congratulations. Just beautiful to see.
Well, awesome, guy. Really my pleasure, man. I love you guys, and I appreciate even, you know, considering me back in 2015, because I wasn't really a big interview guy or anything like that. Yeah. So you guys,
you are
you
now. Guys, now you're you, fucking
you,
media.
Yeah, yeah, you guys kind of made a monster. That's the problem. Now you're actually stuck with me. You can't get rid of me.
Now you got merchandise, and everybody wants a piece. And well, we love you, buddy. Have a great rest of your day, and get some fuel. Wheels up. We'll talk to you next week.
All right, thanks. And because of Petra, because of Brian, I'm a big fucking listener of the show now.
You're the man, right?
I'm a big fan of the show. Keep it up, guys. I'll talk to you.
Thank you, buddy. You're right. I guess he'll just have to fast forward to the Petri dish segment or the main event challenge.
King. He's a king.
Matt MMA Takes podcast. He is Big Gun Brian Petri. Yes. So many directions in which we could go. We only have one prediction to make. We'll do that probably in about a half an hour because we have not even invoked the name Alexander Volkanovsky. excuse me, but I do want to just, I'm going to read the 10-8 language real quick. We are going to get your thoughts on Sterling and Jan officially, and then Chimaev Burns, and then we'll get to the other fights.
Okay.
Canflo, I love watching Mackenzie Dern fight, man. She might be my favorite fighter to watch. I love watching jiu-jitsu application and MMA at the highest level. It's my favorite thing to watch. All right. A 10-8 round in MMA. I'm sorry. You can fast forward 30 seconds if this bores the shit out of you, but we kind of have to do this today. A 10-8 round in MMA is where one fighter wins the round by a large margin. A 10-8 round in MMA is not the most common score a judge will render, but it is absolutely essential to the evolution of the sport and the fairness to the fighters that judges understand and effectively utilize the score of 10-8. That sort of language shouldn't be in the rules, right? Like, that should be in a course, right? We need to know exactly how to score this. The score of 10-8 does not require a fighter to dominate their opponent for 5 minutes of a round. You understand the problem, Kenny? 10-8 round in MMA is where one fighter wins the round by a large margin. Two sentences later, a score of 10-8 does not require a fighter to dominate their opponent for 5 minutes of a round. So you don't need duration. And then the score of 10-8 is utilized by the judge when the judge sees variability.
Which is why in a boxing setting, if someone gets knocked down, it's almost automatically a 10-8, right?
Mm-hmm.
But again, based on that, if I'm looking at it and I'm looking at it from a grappling perspective, was Aljo not on his back for the majority of that round, and he's scoring punches, he's flattening him out, and there's literally nothing offensive that Jan can do. All Jan can do from that back position is survive. That's a dominant round, in my opinion. Yeah. That's winning the round by a large margin, if that's what we're going through. And again, that's very obtuse their language. It's a little ambiguous, but I don't know, man. Interesting.
Bri, how did you see that fight, particularly round one?
Round one, I had Aljo, and I rewatched it this morning. You know, I couldn't get enough. Woke up early.
I
think Jan threw big shots, but they were bouncing off the shoulder. Not that much landed. He was overloading on his shots, and Aljo didn't really initiate the grapple. Threw a lot of kicks. I saw some arguments on Twitter like, "Oh, well, Aljo threw kicks." Yeah, but he threw kicks, and Jan didn't throw anything that landed significantly. I mean, you look at the numbers. Aljo outlanded him in that round. And I just thought Jan was a little too tense. And I think you guys, I think Rogan maybe brought it up on the broadcast. He seemed like he was fighting angry. And you can tell in that first round, he wasn't calm, cool, and collected. He was coming after Aljo, trying to take his head off. And I think he dropped that first round. Now, of course, it's very, very close. I'm not going to sit here and argue. And there's no robberies that need to be thrown out. I just happened to have it for Aljo because I thought Jan was coming up empty on a lot of those shots. And then I had it 10-8 for the second round, right when he flattened him out, because I thought that could be a finish. You know, I go back to the pride. Pride never dies.
Right.
Those pride judges, like, if you are about to finish a fight, you're going to get that round. And I thought, it could have been, you know, I know Jan was scrambling and stuff, but he panicked a little bit. And Aljo, when he flattened him out, got that back control and start raining punches down, that to me secured the 10-8, not to mention the 3+ minutes of ground control.
Right. I can understand what...
Go ahead, Ken.
That's what it was for me as well, Brian, is when he had it flattened out, he landed, you know, some hard shots. Another two and three, that could have been, you know, another two and three hard shots, the referee could have stepped in there. So, yeah, sorry.
Yeah, 100%. And then that's why I didn't score round three for a 10-8, because he didn't flatten him out that round.
Right.
Jan was just kind of guarding a little less back control, but he still had back control. And then four and five, four was a big Jan round. I think Aljo maybe was, just, I don't know if he took it off or whatever, but he shot a little too many times that round. And then the fifth round, like Kenny mentioned earlier, was very close. I mean, I scored it for Jan, but it was not that easy of a round to score. I had Aljo 3-2. I was fairly confident. Obviously I had a bet on him and I was very happy. I text Cody right afterwards because I got a lot of shit for picking Aljo. I got called a homer. I got called. Yeah. Oh,
were you guys the only ones that picked him?
I think so. I tweeted at Kenny because, you know, Kraus picked Jan. And Jan, listen, a lot of people are upset because there's these guys out there, okay? They give their best bets, and it's the three favorites of the fucking card. So they got green-colored glasses on, and they're like, oh, Jan won because they blew up their parlay. That's why they're upset. 100%. You know what I mean?
Right.
Yeah. Why people are getting even more upset. Yeah.
And the thing is, and we say this a lot, right? But you're betting the number and not the fighter. And certainly most of us on this show just didn't see this type of skill gap between these two athletes. But I don't believe Piotr Jan fought a great fight, Ken Flo. I mean, he came out very uncharacteristically. And I do think juxtaposed against the UFC Apex, right? This tiny little octagon with no fans, like he's just totally locked in with that high guard. And then here he's trying to fucking knock his head off, you know?
Yeah, I think he was a little bit too emotional. He was throwing himself off balance on a couple of those punches, which was allowing Aljo to change levels and get in on those legs. But I think the tactical mistakes is when he kept turning away, he was kind of trying to turn away and run away off of the takedown. And in doing that, he was giving perhaps one of the best back takers in the division a tremendous opportunity. And Aljo, if he takes your back, he may not submit you every time, but you're not going to get out. You're not going to get out with some serious damage or at least exerting a tremendous amount of energy. And that's where he failed here in this fight. And then did it again. You know, his corner was going nuts. Paulo Pena was telling him, do not turn your back, whatever you do. And then round three, sure enough, he did it right away. And that had to be very demoralizing for both him and his team.
See, it's Pahumpina, you know, but like he goes by Pahumpa, right? But yeah. Like, what are we supposed to call him on the air? Because it sounds so.
Well, Pahumpina is like it's like a cutie way. It's like, you know, like it's like Bob and Bobby. You know, it's like, hey, Bobby. You know, Bobby. Now he wants to be a Bob. You know, so it's like Pahumpa. Yeah.
By the way, Kenny, I think now heretofore I might have to go Rio de Janeiro.
I like
it's
that.
Not Rio. It's not Rio, huh? Yeah. Fuck, man. That's a tricky one. That's a real tricky one because Rio is known to the world, and it's always been Rio for me on the broadcast. And I
it
got
probably
pulled aside.
Should be anglicized. So yeah, you Rio, Rio's fine.
All right, I got pulled aside by someone and was like, "Hey, you know, I know you're the king of pronunciation, but you do know it's Rio, right?" I'm like, "Fuck, man." Brian, do you have 30 to 45 seconds for us on Chimaev Burns before we get to Volkanovski?
I got 2 hours on that fight.
I know. I know.
Listen, I underestimated Gilbert Burns. I was trying to be pretty nice last podcast when I said, you know, is the number disrespectful? I didn't think it was because I thought Chimaev was that good. But Gilbert Burns really proved it. I mean, I think he's undersized. You know, there's times where he has been chinny, but he showed up. And Kenny, again, mentioned a great point. I texted this to my buddy, said, dude, Gilbert Burns looks a little scared. His walkout did not give me a lot of confidence. Like, if I could live bet my state, I would have doubled, tripled down on Chimaev. But he came out there ready to fight, you know. And Chimaev, though, what I love as a capper, two things is one, this guy's only had 10 fights. He's 27 years old. He's never lost a round. He's never really been hit. He went in there for a 3-round war where he had a huge adrenaline dump after that first round and battled one of the best 170s that we got, right? And looked good doing it and got rocked bad. Like, I mean, I think I missed what Kenny said. I got to go back and rewatch it, but it looked like he was right. Like, he got kicked off because Chimaev didn't know where the fuck he was at. Like, it was, he got hit with a heavy right hand and put him down. It was impressive of him to come back to the round. So as a capper, I'm like, great. Now we're not going to get these blown up lines. People are going to be like, let's fade the hype train. Right. I still think he's the real deal.
Oh, yeah.
This is the 11th pro fight. We might not see minus 550 next time. You know, if he fights, I think he's going to fight the winner of Luque Bilal, who we'll talk about later. I think that's the winner of that. And, you know, if I think he'll probably still be the favorite, but he's not going to be 5-1. Right. And as a capper, I like that because I do think the guy's got the goods. And this is what I want to see. You see all these guys running through people, and then all of a sudden he has a stern test, showed out with his chin. He did fade a little bit with the cardio, but Dana White, I believe, mentioned it could have been an adrenaline dump, which is 100%. He came out jacked. He was sitting on top of the cage, you know, and then he just battled back. He showed that, hey, listen, I'm not just a wrestler, but I'm a guy that can strike and I can bang it out, even though that might not be the smartest game plan. His corner is screaming at him, which I love. But yeah, listen, I'm impressed with both guys. Both guys are winners in my book. Super impressed with both. Yeah. I
mean, the sitting on top of the cage was unbelievable. Crazy. It has to be a first, right, John? I mean, you would know better than I would, but I've never seen anything like that. It was,
you want to know why?
It was epic. What's that?
Because 99.5% of the fighters, were they to do that, security would be over in a minute and tell them.
Right. Right. He can pull off. I want to ask you about something because I felt like you guys touched on it, but production didn't go back to it. And I think, you know, there was so Gilbert knocked Chimaev down and it looked like he threw a kick or a knee or something. Did that land? And how much of an effect did that have? Because you guys never showed the replay on it. What happened there?
We kind of brushed over it because I think it was soft and inconsequential, if memory serves, you know?
Okay.
But candidly, you know, I'd honestly have to go back. I do. Like, it feels like Julio Arce fought like 3 weeks ago. Like, my brain is so scrambled. So, but I think that's what happened. I think that's what happened. That it wasn't necessarily anything that, either fighter thought much about, and we just kind of moved on. I will say too, just in closing on Burns and Chimaev, I just had written down, you know, Kenny, you sort of said off the top of your analysis of that fight that they both learned a lot about themselves, or not a lot, but you said they both learned about themselves, but certainly you would suggest that Chimaev learned more about himself than Gilbert did because Gilbert knows that he's a dog. He knows how resilient he is. Now, maybe the chin won't hold up in other fights, you know, but he just, with his cardiovascular base and all the work that he puts in, would you just agree that Gilbert like knew that he could, or I don't know what I'm trying to say.
It's possible. You know what I mean? Listen, I think that, listen, there's sometimes as a fighter where you're like, I think if it gets dark, I believe that I'm going to be able to fight through that darkness, through that tough time. Mm-hmm. After the fight, though, that's when you really know for sure.
Yeah.
And I think he knows for sure now. And he went against one of the most dangerous MMA fighters to have ever entered the octagon, you know, based on what we've seen in a lot of ways. Like the way that he wrestles, how hard he hits, the size of him, he's an absolute juggernaut. And Gilbert was outgunned, okay? And I think if he didn't know before, he definitely knows now. And I think that was kind of what he alluded to after the fight. It was like a reassurance and a confidence in himself now saying, hey, you're going to have to kill me. And he went to that place. But you don't really know until you're there. And I think that was one of those fights where both men, again, know a hell of a lot more about themselves than they did before.
I love it.
Just an absolute hell of a fight.
Absolutely. We have so much to get to. We need to start getting to Alexander Volkanovski, whose future is in the UFC Hall of Fame. Kempflo, we'll start with you on Volk. Gosh, you know, I didn't realize till after the fact that he said to Chan Sung Jung at the beginning of round four, "You sure? You know? All right."
Oh my God. He looks phenomenal, dude. Wow.
Walk to me on Alexander Volkanovski, Flo.
He's a beast. Listen, it's funny because, you know, before the fight, I was kind of scrolling through Instagram all nervous, like, what's going to happen? And I see Adesanya post a pretty hefty bet of Volkanovski by knockout. And I was like, that's interesting. If there's someone who knows something, it's probably Adesanya. And of course, he's biased because he's friends with him and trains with him. But again, just like you know a little bit more something about yourself when you're in fights like that, what do you think that win over Ortega did for Volkanovski and all those fights? All that, you gain so much more power and energy after a fight like that, knowing that if shit gets crazy, you're going to be able to fight back and come back. And I think we saw an energized and confident Volkanovski. That was the best we'd ever seen him. Zombie really was never in this fight, and Zombie try. You know, when Zombie shows up, he's going to try to not only win, he's going to try to destroy you. And there was nothing he could do to Volkanovski out there. Volkanovski was just firing on all cylinders. It was a brilliant performance. I don't remember him getting hit with a heavy shot, really, that was clean.
Yeah.
Defensively, offensively, footwork wise, variety of attacks and defenses. This kid is unbelievable, man. He's been underrated even as a champion. Just another amazing performance from Volkanovski, who continues to improve. This guy's a serious martial artist, man.
Brian, one of our other resident handicappers, Odd Sharks Joe Osborne, couldn't join us last week, but his play on the fight at plus 210 was Alexander Volkanovski by knockout. And when you considered recent history for Volk, last finish came against Chad Mendes, December 2018. You had to think that was going to be a priority, and he got the knockout. The guy's the total package, man. What are your thoughts on Volkanovski here making it three successive defenses?
Yeah, I said on these airwaves last week, I thought he'd finish it late. I used my old Midwest gut and placed the fourth round knockout at +1400. So I had it. That saved my night. I had Aljo on a couple units, and I hit fourth round knockout on Volkanovski.
And that saved your night? Why? Were there a couple prelims?
Yeah, I went pretty heavy on Josh Fram. I like Josh Fram. I went heavy on him as a dog.
I like him too.
Oh, he's a good dog
Kempflo
spot there.
Texted me on Anthony fucking Hernandez, excuse me. But Kenny texted me about Anthony. He can fight, man.
Yeah, dude, he can fight.
I looked at the Kevin Holland and Josh Fram are built kind of the same, and Holland put Hernandez down the knee. So I thought, oh, okay, you know, because I like Fram, you know. And then I just, you know, so I went a little heavy on him too much. Yeah. That's okay. We rebounded well. But listen, Volkanovski, I might be throwing the P word around with this fight.
He might be perfect.
I mean, seriously, like the way he switches stances effortlessly, and there's no defensive liability when he switches stances, you know, that's the thing is more fighters want to do that. But if they go southpaw, then they're like, fuck, I don't know which hand comes up to kick or whatever. And he does it effortlessly. His shots, his doubles, he mixed everything up. His cardio is on point. His chin's good. His mental's good. And I was watching the embeds, and obviously we did the podcast last weekend, and I said I thought he's going to finish. He looked at the camera and said, I know people say I'm going to knock him out, and that's for the sell the fight. I'm knocking this guy out. And Alexander Volkanovski is a guy you fucking believe. You're like, oh yeah, he's knocking him out. And I was confident in going in there. He listened, Zombie. Unfortunately, I love Zombie. I have a Korean Zombie shirt, the famous one. but that was about 40 pounds ago, so it does not fit me. So I did not want to show off a little too much here, so I did not wear it. But he's a legend, but he probably shouldn't have been in there. This sounds like maybe, you know, Max Holloway is supposed to take the fight in March. Something happened. I would have liked to see Josh Emmett in there, maybe some young guns. But listen, no knock on Korean Zombie. I just thought this was going to be – I thought it was going to be the way it was. And that's his first class on Volkanovski after starting the fourth round. Like, are you sure? Because I beat you up pretty bad in that third. Are you sure? And then Herb Dean with a great stoppage. I know we shit on refs a lot, but Herb Dean stepped in there and saved that man, because Zombie's just – I mean, he's a zombie. He's tough. He's not going to quit, so –
Yeah, I agree. Herb Dean deserves credit for the way he handled that. Yeah, man. I mean, perfect is probably a good adjective right now, Kenny, to describe Alexander Volkanovski's game. I don't know how good his chokes are necessarily. I mean, I do think all these fighters should go to the Ken Flew school of submission offense, you know, there in Charlotte, North Carolina. He's got fucking padded walls in his house. But, you know, Kenny, to me, it's like he is firmly entrenched in that pound for pound conversation, which candidly is not a conversation that I really even enjoy, but he looks like that was like a perfect performance as far as I'm concerned.
That's a professional. You know, if you are an amateur fighter or a new up and coming professional fighter, I think it might be worth it going down to Australia and training with him and his team and just watch what Volkanovski does on a daily basis. And listen to him talk and break things down. This is a very intelligent professional fighter, like in all aspects. It's very cool to watch.
Yeah.
So in terms of what is next for Alexander Volkanovski, I think it'll be the Holloway trilogy, because I think the calendar will align. There are rumblings that the UFC is trying to get back to Australia this year. Maybe it'll be Perth, which is really far from Miami, or Sydney, which is a little bit closer. But I do believe that Alexander Volkanovski's next title defense should come in Australia. You know, Volk says, you know, he wants
to he trains in New Zealand. I'm sorry, but he goes back and forth. He lives in Australia.
No, but freestyle fighting gym, though, they want to make it very clear. Freestyle fighting gym in Windang, Australia, I believe it is his home base.
Yeah,
you know?
Because he goes back and forth. Right.
Yeah, but he does spend some time at City Kickboxing here and there, less so during this COVID-19 climate. But, you know, if he wants guys to make a statement, you know, Arnold Allen did, but I don't believe he had a top five ranking when he did it. And it came against Dan Hooker, who was unranked, even though obviously he was credentialed at lightweight. You know, Josh Emmett is coming off a win, but if memory serves, it was not a finish. But I do believe because of the injury history for Emmett, you know, maybe if they wanted to turn Volk around quickly and Holloway wasn't ready, you know, maybe he would get the fight, you know. Sometimes the fan base says now puts words in my mouth, suggesting that I want Emmett to like leapfrog Holloway. But Kempfel, what do you think for Volkanovski? Are you thinking Holloway trilogy right now? Because that was the first name out of the mouth of Volkanovski.
So, yeah, I think for someone like Josh Emmett, it's been a while since we've seen him compete. I think he lost some momentum. He isn't this big name that's on the tip of the tongue of a lot of UFC fans right now. Yep. But he certainly is a worthy challenger. I think Holloway's the guy. I think Holloway is a huge name. He's a guy that's going to show up. I love Volkanovski, and I think he's a very different fighter from the last time they fought. He did get the nod, but I thought Holloway did win that fight. So I think you have the storyline there. Yeah. I think that's the one. And I think it would be phenomenal based on what we're seeing from Volkanovski right now and Holloway.
God.
Like, how is that fight not ridiculous?
Yeah, Bri, they're both so much better even now than they were when they met that second time on Fight Island. Is that the direction in which you'd go, Bri?
Yeah, I mean, and Holloway, but listen, I think you guys are forgetting one guy from Massachusetts.
I know, I knew I was forgetting it.
Yeah, Calvin Cade. Yeah. It's 145 is kind of a logjam because you got guys, we touched on everyone, and they're either coming off a loss. You got Giga Katz coming off a loss, Cater coming off that horrible beating Holloway. But I feel like if you lose to Holloway, that's kind of a given at 45. I mean, he's the best. So if Holloway's not ready, or if Holloway doesn't want to take the fight, or whatever happens, or if they want to go in a different direction to sell, maybe like new blood or whatever it is, Calvin Cater will answer the call. I guarantee it. You know what I mean? So
how about that? You know, yeah. I mean, I guess I thought about him 1-1 in his last two, right? So maybe that's why I wasn't.
But his Giga performance,
dude,
man.
Dude, imagine the fucking cue the fucking duck boat.
Yeah.
Calvin Cater. All right. Mackenzie Dern over Tisha Torres by split decision. Really close fight for my money, Ken Flo. I love both of these women. I do want to tell you that We announced Tisha Torres fighting out of Colorado Springs, Colorado, by way of Fall River, Massachusetts. That was all fucking me. It was my final question in the fighter meeting. Fall I said, River. Tisha, you claim Fall River. It's on your bio. Like, why have you never been announced out of Fall River, Massachusetts? And she's like, let's do it. I'm like, thank you. It's about time. Fucking Fall River. Kenny, what'd you think of that fight overall, and how'd you score it?
I thought it was a really entertaining fight, man. It was awesome. I kind of felt the energy a little bit at the press conference. They were kind of throwing jabs back at each other. I'm like, ooh, this is getting spicy. I like this. And it was a pretty spicy fight as well. You know, they were getting after it. Man, Mackenzie Dern just with those, you know, machine gun type submission setups. You know, she was so close. How tough is Tisha Torres? Now, granted, she has like 12-inch long arms, you know? I mean, she's like really short arms. You can't lock those things up. They're so damn short.
Yeah.
But, you know, she is tough as hell. Like, literally just lifted her up from the Kimura and just, like, powered out of it. And then had to really squirm out of some serious submission attempts from Mackenzie Dern, one of the best submission artists in that division to have ever been in that division, more accurately. And she showed a lot of toughness. I thought, obviously, That was the thing, right? It was Torres on the feet versus the ground game and grappling of Mackenzie Dern. I thought Mackenzie showed some improvements. She seemed really focused. She was in shape for this one, but I thought Torres was gonna get the nod. Honestly, I thought she did enough, but really, it was a close fight. Those are the kind of ones that, you know, you can't really be upset about. I thought Torres was going to win, but it was really close, and Mackenzie fought her ass off. So I was thoroughly entertained.
Yeah, Bri, I agree. I thought Torres won rounds 1 and 3, but that doesn't seem to be the majority opinion. A lot of people feel like Mackenzie Dern landed the more significant shots in that first round. I can't get enough of watching Mackenzie Dern in combat. You know, I feel for Tisha because this would have meant a 4-fight winning streak and a top 5 ranking and potentially a UFC main event. And I think she really handled this very difficult challenge well. What were your thoughts on that fight?
Yeah, I had Torres winning as well. But again, I had her in a parlay, so it was maybe a little green color glasses on my side.
Yeah.
But I was impressed by both females. Listen, Mackenzie Dern, I thought this was a really bad matchup for her. I thought, you know, she's a little stagnant on the feet. She rushes in. I thought Torres was a bit of a counter, and she did really well, counter well in the first round. But that pressure, man, that pressure is crazy. And then one of the few fighters in the UFC that can pull guard and be absolutely dangerous. And she pulled guard, jump guard, really didn't really pull it. Tisha held her up, and she had that Kimura lock. And I'm like, man, this girl is nuts.
Yeah.
Third round was very, very close, very competitive. I had a lot of people on my end split on this as well. A lot of people thought it was Dern, a lot of people thought it was Torres. Competitive fight. Again, I'm not calling robbery at all. I thought Torres edged it out. But I'm impressed by both, and Mackenzie Dern's cardio. And remember not too long ago where she was missing weight and they made her go to 125? Like, she has corrected all that.
Yeah.
She's a professional. And, man, if she just gets really killer wrestling, she's going to be champion. I mean, there's no doubt in my mind.
I think so, too. You don't have to worry, too, excuse me, about the work ethic or her appetite for MMA training anymore, right? So in 3 training camps now with her strength and conditioning coach, Rogério Camões, she has added 11 pounds of muscle and halved her body fat from like 22% to 11%. And she's all in. Total body composition change. And I'm really happy for her. She's a great kid. And so is Tisha. But it goes to Mackenzie Dern. Kenflo, did you see Alexi Olenek with the scarf hold choke of Jared Vandera? Did you see it? Yeah or no?
I did. Yeah.
All right. So what you didn't see on camera, if memory serves, like, was Jared Vandera's like violent reaction to whatever the fuck was happening with his face that had just been crushed by Olenek and his fucking neck.
Right.
Jesus Christ, man. Like, Olenek's got to be careful, man. These guys got kids.
Dude, he's got that old man strength, kid. It's crazy. Listen, you know, it's funny. Before the match, I'm like, this dude, all he does is like, he'll grab a hold of your arm and neck from any position and you are done. Even if you're in the mount position, he can submit you. But he's got the most insane strength. I remember someone telling me about Olenek when he first got in the UFC. They're like, dude, you know, he may not be the most technical guy, but he's one of the strongest dudes we've ever had. And he's just so unorthodox. And his strength is so unusual that whatever he grabs, he breaks.
I don't think he's even training. I think he's just carrying his kids and he just goes and weighs in and chokes you out.
He has to train.
He's got 3 minutes in there. No, I love you, Alexi, but I'm saying he's got like 4 or 5 minutes, yeah. You know?
Yes.
Gas.
I love literally every time he wins, I laugh my ass off. It's just like, kinda, and it's no offense. It's just like, he did it again. He did it again.
Sorry, what do you got? I have the exact same emotion.
I mean, the guy was tired after 3 overhand right hands that were even close. I'm like, oh, this is bad news. Vendera was like trying to, you know, short notice, trying to ease into it. And then when it went to the ground, I'm like, Vendera, get up. What are you doing? Get up. Well, you're not getting up. Okay. You're fucking dead. And he got his head popped off. I mean, I was like, Kenny, I was laughing my ass off. I couldn't believe it.
Did you guys see the video of Vendera seeking out Olenek in the back?
I saw that.
No.
What happened? Right. And so, well, he just Olenek was showing Vendera how he got him in it, and then Vendera practiced the move on one of his own teammates. But
did he really?
You know,
oh, that's cool.
As Olenek was sort of showing Vendera what he did, he was not putting pressure on that spot, but you could see where Vendera's face was almost like crushed in. And I don't know, man. I don't know.
Did he tap from the submission, or was the chest hairs that was in his mouth and eyes and nose?
Tapology better put on chest hair submission, because that's a – but listen, another thing, too, this guy's undersized. Like, Vendera's huge. Olenek's not big, and he still can pull your head off. It's amazing.
Yeah. Vendera, though, it's like you got to avoid that ground at all. What are you dicking around down there, ground and pound? Just get out of there. Get out of the head.
Congratulations to Olenek for hitting his 168th submission.
What a man that guy is.
The real number is 47 submission wins for Alexei Olenek. And that's a legitimate fucking number.
That's insane.
And Vendera cuts down to 266 pounds. It's interesting, too, because Olenek, when we asked him, and we had our fighter meeting with him in Columbus because he was going to fight Alir Latifi, but we asked him about coaching, and he said he's tired of martial arts, you know, so I sort of joke about him just sort of, you know, taking the kids to school and, you know, go weigh in and just, you know, see what we can do here in 5 minutes. We crush another
soul. He just sits at home squeezing a medicine ball. Yeah. That's the training camp. Medicine ball for you.
Sylvester Stallone and Over the Top with that little thing in his trunk where he just kept.
With the move. Yeah.
So fans in Jacksonville were outstanding. Thank you all so much. Couple other things we're going to highlight here before we make a prediction on the way out for Bilal Muhammad, who, by the way, has a podcast on this channel with my twin brother. My twin brother was in the building, had the fucking time of his life Saturday night. You know? But they do a podcast called Remember the Show on this channel, and we're going to see Bilal in the main event here for the second time against Vicente Luque this weekend. Bilal's the underdog. We'll get a prediction from these fucking slapdicks here in a minute, but I want to get your thoughts on really underslept on Ian Garry against Darian Weeks. If I could, unanimous decision can flow for Garry. And, I think he's an acquired taste for some, but at the end of the day, Kenny, he is striving for mixed martial arts perfection. He's just so all about this. He works so hard. You know, he wants to be a great wrestler, grappler. I don't have enough praise for him as an individual seeking this UFC glory. I just think sometimes he becomes a victim of expectation.
You know what we don't see so much in the UFC or in mixed martial arts in general is the balance of a fighter between confidence and honesty, confidence and reality, whatever that is. And he's a guy who exhibits confidence. He's got skill, but he also knows that he's got things to improve on. And when I see that kind of balance, I know this kid's probably going to do some great things in this sport. Is he going to be a champion? I don't know. I think it's too early. But is he going to do great things? Yeah, I think he is. I think he's got good size for the division. I think he moves really well. He's very skillful, and he's showing a lot of skill at a very early age. To me, shows a lot of intelligence. It shows that he's in the gym. It shows that he's setting small goals on his way up to the top. And those are all good signs, man. And the fact that he's moving to the United States and dedicating himself to this is all the great signs, surrounding himself with all the amazing talent down in South Florida. He's not a perfect fighter, but should he be? I mean, how many perfect fighters are there? You know, Volkanovski, maybe a couple others. That's it. And what does that mean? You know, so I think that the sky's the limit for him. I think he's taking the right fights as well. And I'm impressed. A lot of maturity in that young man.
BP, what do you got?
Yeah, a lot of people were quick to fade this guy because he's arrogant, right? But Kenny hit it and nailed it. I mean, he has a perfect balance. And, you know, he's got a crazy story. Got kicked out of his gym, came to Sanford, which is arguably could be a better gym, you know, from Ireland. He's only got – this was his ninth pro fight. Everyone from Ireland wants him to be Conor McGregor. There's not – Conor McGregor's don't grow on trees, okay? But I was impressed. Darren Weeks is a tricky guy. You know, he's had a couple professional boxing matches. He just wanted to stall the fight. He wanted to grapple him up. He was pretty bricked up. And Ian Garry – his head movement was on point, and then that third round was his best round, so it proved he had cardio as well. I thought that was some good ring time for him. You know, I didn't think he'd come out there and start Weeks right in the first round like he did Jordan Williams, because Jordan Williams leaves himself open a little bit. But that third round showed a lot to me. Showed the kid's got cardio. He can go three rounds. He dropped him in that third round and then remained patient and didn't take any damage. The sky's the limit for Ian Garry. I like him. I'm all in.
So when Kenny Florian went into the octagon to interview Conor McGregor after his UFC debut, April 6, 2013 in Sweden, I wasn't there with Ken Flo because my wife was pregnant with my second daughter. Ian Garry is a 15-year-old kid in Ireland watching this fight in the wee hours of Sunday morning, right? And then you go to school on Monday. And he told all of this, you know, to the media this week. But think about this, 15-year-old kid watching Conor McGregor. And then these kids all, you know, go to school the next day and they're all mimicking him and 50 G's baby and everything else. And it's just, it really is crazy, right? I mean, literally Conor McGregor was the inspiration for boxer Ian Garry to try judo. He became a judo black belt at 18. You know, and I don't know BP as much as I love you that I would even use the word arrogant, you know, but I guess that's a fair adjective. I guess I just see this side of him that just isn't that at all. Sure. You know, it's like,
and I
just
meant that in a positive way. I do think fighters need to have some kind of arrogance to them because they're stepping in. I mean, no other sports like this. I mean, they're literally getting in there and fighting another guy's training as long as them. So you got to have some kind of confidence within yourself. Right. Yeah.
And I do believe there's a, with respect to the coaching he was getting, there's a huge gap in terms of what he was learning. I mean, Kenny, he's learning so many nuanced things from Henry. So I do think, and from a matchmaking standpoint, they are proceeding well with him. We congratulate Mike Malotte on a huge knockout and did a lot with his mic time to help Joey Rodriguez and his family. Raquel Pennington's won four in a row. I thought she looked great against Aspen Ladd, especially given the fact that she had less than 2 weeks to prepare. Last fight I'll get your thoughts on before we move on. Anthony Hernandez, Ken Flo, over Josh Fremd. And if you don't know, now you know. I mean, Anthony Hernandez is not just here to take part. He has championship aspirations, and he really is getting better fight in and fight out. Your thoughts, Flo?
Well, listen, Fremd is a problem. He's a good fighter. Yeah. Okay. Anthony Hernandez is the guy that you show up and you see this guy across the cage from you in sparring or in training, and you're like, all right, maybe I should take it easy on this guy, work some rounds and work some new stuff. And you're like, oh, I just kind of lost that round. All right, I'm going to kick it up now. And then you find that you lost that round as well. And in the third round, by the time you realize that he's a great fighter, he's actually kicking your ass. This kid can grapple. He can fight. He literally never stopped doing something.
Yeah,
that to me is a sign of a dude who like really knows what he's doing. He's game as F. He's good everywhere. And you start thinking, you're like, well, this is the guy who got the fluke submission against Rodolfo Vieira. I don't think that was a fluke. Like, how many times did he set up that arm and guillotine on him? I was like, he's going to do it again.
Yeah.
And I think in 15 minutes, I became more impressed with him in 15 minutes in this fight than I did in his upset win over Rodolfo Vieira. Like, this kid's a problem, man. Like, good luck to anyone who needs to go out there. Like, that's a guy that you have to kill. But you have to get through all of that skill everywhere in order to do it as well. So I think he's going to surprise a lot of people, and he's going to get a lot of upset wins in the future.
Yeah. Quote unquote. Yeah. Bri, Ken Flo's just on fire today. You know, the quote I wrote down was, you know, it's not just cardio, it's that he really knows what he's doing, right? There's no hesitation because transitionally, Bri, he seems to know exactly what to do all the time. I thought it was a brilliant fight, really, on both sides in a lot of respects. Yeah. Fremd showed a lot of heart and resolve and rallied. And I took a picture with Fremd's brother after the fact, and I was like, you guys should be really proud. He's like, oh, we are.
Yeah. Yeah, Frem. Like, listen, I went heavy on Frem because I liked him in the LFA, and the looking for a fight. Dana White, he got the contract from that, and he's huge. He's 6'4", 185. I like his striking. I like his power. But listen, Anthony Hernandez is doing something that, you know, Americans don't do. That's a dude from Dagestan right there, right? Grappling, chain grappling, going for these submissions. And people were kind of like, oh, well, maybe give up on the Darce or give up on the arm and Ginty. I like that he was going for that because, you know what? If he lost position, he's going to get it back because he scrambles well. His cardio is on point. Friend faded a little bit. Second round, he had a good round, but he faded a little bit. And I liked him going for that. He wasn't happy with the decision win. He wanted to go out there and he wanted to take a neck, and that was what impressed me by Frem. After that first round, I'm like, okay, we got a big grappling disadvantage here on Frem's side. But then those chokes were deep, and that's like his move. He has the darts and he has the arm in. And I'm like, man, this Frem is showing a lot of heart. He could have took this fight on short notice. He could have easily been like, eyes tight, tap. Okay, I'll fight to live another day. Live the fight another day, is what I should say. But no, I was super impressed with Hernandez because you just don't see guys at 85, not from Dagestan, putting that kind of pressure on you and then just sitting there talking post fight, just chilling, like not even like
he's the man. Dead. He's the man. California, cool. Congratulations to Anthony Fluffy Hernandez. And just a great card top to bottom. One of the longer pay per views we've ever done. And last thing on UFC 273, Ken Flo. Like, if you're like, do white belts get put in like scarf hold chokes where their necks and faces are just crushed into eternity? Is that what happens? Like jujitsu class 5? Yeah, great.
Kind of. Listen, awesome. The most dangerous animal on the planet is the blue belt in Brazilian jiu-jitsu, okay? Because they have just enough information to kind of hurt you and themselves.
Yeah.
And I think, as a white belt, you got to be careful, especially with the big boys. But Olenek, I mean, again, that one technique that he has, he hits it at such a high level. And again, ridiculous. You compound that with the kind of gorilla strength that he has.
Yeah.
Watch out, man.
I'm so sick in the head. I want to meet Oleksiy Oleinik. I want him to put me in that. I want to see what it feels like.
We can arrange that.
He might break your hand with a handshake, let alone
that. I know. I want to feel it. I just need to feel it.
All right. Here's what we're going to do.
Yeah.
Next time he fights in the UFC, you're going to be my guest, and we'll do a fighter meeting.
Yes.
And he'll push in the goddamn thing. We'll see how you survive.
R.I.P.
Kenny,
I need to do it.
Kenny, I know some of the jiu-jitsu history and origins. Do you think that the gentle art is a good name for jiu-jitsu?
Oh, gosh. I think that is the ideal, right? That's like what as martial artists, we're looking at, you know, as far as how we want to explore our jiu-jitsu and execute with our jiu-jitsu. But sometimes you got to just get nasty. And Olenek just – he puts gentle a little more art. Spice on that. That's not gentle. Yeah.
I hope I don't offend all the great, classy jiu-jitsu practitioners around the world when I say – the gentle art is an absurd way to describe jiu-jitsu. That is ridiculous. I was like crying in my gi driving home to Boca Raton, Florida. The fucking gentle art. You know, I wasn't crying after my boxing lessons, of that I can assure you. Yeah. Jesus. All right. Hope you enjoyed our spirited recap today. UFC Fight Night, Luque versus Muhammad beckons Saturday night at the UFC Apex. We have two UFC newcomers competing in the co-main event. So we are just going to do a main event prediction today because we wanted to save the bulk of our time for UFC 273. And we're not going 3 hours today because we're trying to leave the masses wanting more. So Vicente Luque is minus 170. Bilal Muhammad is plus 150. It's a rematch of a fight that went to Luque back in the day. How do you see the rematch playing out, Brian Petrie? And I guess you probably got to be careful picking against Bilal on the day.
Shout out Jason Anik. Awesome show. Remember the show. Love it on this channel. I usually don't like rematches unless one guy reaches to the title, right? Usually, like, you know, they fought early in the career. But this makes sense because 170 is kind of a logjam. You got the ranked 11th guy fighting the second-ranked guy, which Chimaev. So this makes a lot of sense in the world. Listen, I have faded Luque most of his UFC career, and I don't know why it is. I mean, he's almost made me homeless the way I've lost money on this guy. I just feel like sometimes he's skilled everywhere. I just feel like sometimes he fights to his competition. Like, if there's a grapple, like with the Chiesa fight, he's willing to grapple Chiesa, and I think Chiesa made some crucial mistakes, and he's got his darstroke. His darstroke is frightening, and his stand-up is great as well, but there's times where, like in the Mike Perry fight, where he's looked very pedestrian. He's got some weird wins and some really good really weird losses in there as well. But he's an elite guy. No, you know, don't take me fading this guy for elite guy. He's getting better. He obviously beat Bilal in Bilal's, I believe, his third UFC fight. And that's a Bilal, excuse me. God, I got to get that.
Well, let me just say, like, we used to mess up his first name and his last name and call him Bilal Muhammad. And it's Bilal Muhammad. So
okay. I'm just going to stick with Bilal because I don't want to butcher everything.
Yeah, that's good enough. Bully B also works.
Yeah, Bully B came in the UFC undefeated, and he had a win over my guy Chris Curtis in Chicago, which I was a hair away from going to see that. That was a very interesting fight. That, to me, when he got that fight, he fought two more times, went in the UFC. I was like, oh, this guy's going to be great in the UFC. Went 1-2. And I went back and rewatched a lot of his fights, early fights. He didn't really have that swagger that he has now. Like, he definitely is a confident guy, but he wasn't the same guy we're seeing now, right? He's still trying to find himself. Do I want to be a boxer? Do I want to be a grappler? He's, you know, moved camps a little bit. That Chicago camp that he has, you know, he's at Rufus for a while. Chicago camp's coming along great. You know, he's got Ignacio Bohomandez, which is the best name in the world. Yep. And he goes down to Sanford MMA. And now he's got that, you know, that swagger. He's got that fuck you smirk at the weigh-ins, which needs to be on a t-shirt. I love that. I love the confidence he has. And he's fine in his game. You know what I mean? He's not a power puncher. He's a volume puncher. He knows that. His defense has been a liability at times, but he showed a chin off in the Jeff Neal fight. I know Luque clipped him and put him down, but in the Jeff Neal fight, he showed, hey, I can have a chin. Sometimes it's high up in the air a little bit, but he likes to put pressure on you. But his best game is his grappling, and that's what he needs to lean on. I feel like sometimes he didn't really want to lean on that because I think he maybe got wrapped up. He wanted to be an exciting fighter or whatever the case. He went 1-2 in the UFC. He decided, you know what? I need to rattle off some wins. Got 3 in a row, 4 in a row. Now he's on a 6-fight win streak after the Jeff Neal fight. And I love his game right now because positionally, he's going to take you down and wear you out. And that's what he does. His cardio is unmatched at 170. I will bet a hefty dollar amount that no one matches his cardio at 170. It's on another level. And he does have good submissions, but I feel like positionally is where he breaks you, and then you'll give up a neck. And in the Chiesa fight, which is what I keep going back to in Luque, Chiesa, similar kind of style, maybe a little different grappling style than Luque, or excuse me, Bilal, because of you know, body size and whatever. But Chiesa was doing really well in that fight. And he just made a mistake and fell into that darce, which is Luque's move. So I love Bilal by decision here. I think he's going to drown him in the deep waters. This is a 5-round fight. I love that for Bilal. If it was a 3-round fight, I might pause a little bit. But at that underdog number, and again, this isn't a homer pick. This is something I'm going to put my own money on. I like Bilal by decision here. I just think he's going to have an interesting first 2 rounds with Luque and then eventually just take him in the deep waters and drown him. So fairly confident in this underdog play as well.
And I'm also friendly with Vicente Luque. I mean, Bilal obviously is my boy. I'm not going to hide it. But we did have Luque on the Anakin Florian podcast right before he went back to Brasilia for his training camp. Not necessarily to balance things out because we like Vicente Luque. Ken Flo, I thought the betting line would be a little bit closer just given the fact that, to Brian's point, Bilal really has found his style and really understands now how to apply his skills, I think. But Luque is the more prolific finisher. Obviously, his UFC resume has more big wins on it. As such, Luque is a near 2-1 favorite. I'm not sure he's the 24/7, 365 guy that Bilal is in terms of being married to the game. He is married in life. He has a child now, you know. But man, Luque's training camps are outstanding. His coaching staff is outstanding. He is elite, one of the best in the world. I guess I thought it'd be more -140 +120. You're paying -170 on the Luque side. Ken Flo, which way are you going?
No question about it. Listen, Brian Petrie, leave some meat on the bone for me. My goodness, what a breakdown.
Hey, listen, you up my game. You've been on fire all podcast.
I've been talking way too much.
I enjoy it.
But that was awesome, Brian. You know, listen, not a whole lot for me to add. It was a brilliant breakdown. I think that all of those things are true. And, you know, it's hard. I love this fight. I love this breakdown. And I think that, you know, for Bilal, I think that he has a little bit more path to victory, and I really appreciate his intelligence. And I think not only have I slept on Vicente Luque a little bit, I've slept on Bilal as well sometimes. And I'm always just blown away at his approach and the kind of work that he does behind the scenes. That has to be the case based on what I'm seeing. So, I like this fight for Bilal as well. I think Luque is extremely dangerous. The problem is, I think Luque shines if it gets down to being a war, a back and forth, kind of like, you know, stand in front of each other, throw down. I like Luque's chances there. I think Luque will win that fight. But Bilal, I think, is so smart and will he's so good at never allowing fighters to do what they do, right? And I think that's kind of a sign of a great chess player is if I cannot let you do what you do best, I win.
Yeah.
And that's kind of been Bilal's approach. So I like Bilal here. Look at the momentum he's having right now. Look at who he's beating. I think he's well poised to win this fight. I don't see him making a major mistake.
Yeah.
He's not a guy who takes major risks. He takes the smartest path to victory. And for that, I agree with Brian, and I like Bilal here as well.
And man, he's got an edge to him of late. I would also point out that the last 2 weeks of his camp have taken place during Ramadan. And I think maybe Kenny and Brian, in some respects, that is okay because he's at a time where he has to be cutting weight. But, you know, I can just say that we were trying to push out some content with him this week and, you know, not really able to do it, putting in two or three sessions a day with cotton mouth, not able to drink water all day. Crazy. I mean, it's just absolutely nuts, what he does, but all the respect in the world to the Muslims and Bilal Muhammad. All right. For more from Brian Petrie, it's at MMA Takes Podcast. Great to see you, my man. Thank you for the extended time today. And
absolutely. It was my pleasure.
All right. We'll talk to you next week. I think we got UFC Fight Night, Lemos versus Andrade or something like that, but have a good week, brother. And we'll talk soon, kid, huh?
You too, boys. I'll see you.
Well done, dude.
See you. All right, there he is, Brian Petrie, with us every week here on the Anakin Florian Podcast. Also with us every week, the executive producer of this channel and the producer of the weekly Scraps Podcast for Aljamain Sterling. This guy's been very celebratory over the last 24 hours. How about your guy Aljo getting it done, kid? Huh?
I mean, someone's got to push back, right? I mean, I've been taking this shit too.
I know.
Oh, you're a homer. Oh, yeah, right. Jan was smoking him the first fight. I went back and rewatched it. Come on, fellas.
Dare I ask?
The championship stays in Long Island.
Could I ask how close you thought the first round was, or do we not need to go down that?
I mean, I'm a cynic. Like, I'm watching it thinking that the judges are going to screw out Joe. I mean, I thought it could go either way in the first round because
all right.
You know, I thought it was interesting what Alan Joban said in the post fight with you when went right from effective striking to octagon control. And that's not simply how the scoring is laid out. It's effective striking, effective grappling, aggressiveness, octagon control. So you're not even getting to the fourth criteria in most fights.
Right. Kenny. Yeah. So I guess he was saying that, you know, he couldn't determine, and maybe he doesn't know the exact letter of the law. I think he's an outstanding analyst. I got to work with him for the first time. But, like he couldn't maybe determine a winner based upon effective striking, grappling, or aggression. And I think you probably could have and wouldn't have to have gone to that fourth condition. What did we miss today as we get to the marrow seconds on the way out? Anything major, kid?
Oh, well, I don't know. Can you see the glow? Just this glow of a champion? And unfortunately, I think Ray lost his bet. I think the crowd was a little bit pro Jan there on the walk in, but I mean, would you rather win the bet or win the bet?
A little bet? Bit, right. A lot of bit, but
would rather win the bet?
No, Burns was able to turn around the crowd. They're still booing Aljamain Sterling at the end.
Burns was fantastic. I mean, can you cut that clip of him at the end? Like, I live for this shit. You're going to have to kill me.
So, Dorinho would be a good tattoo, Kenny, but I'm not little tough one. So, right, isn't that the direct translation to Dorinho?
Exactly. Yeah.
So I'm not tough enough to get a Dorinho tattoo. Maybe we go Dorinho on one side of the neck and fucking Game Bread on the other when we retire. Just play golf with my neck tattoos all day.
Just get the human performance tattoo and just cut a little deal. You'd be like, if I get this, I'm not paying for a session the next.
That's
six
right,
months.
Rio Santana. If you're listening, IHP tattoo right on my pectoral.
Well, I mean, and speaking of invoices for Ray, I mean, you know, yes, we pay Ray handsomely for his time, but I need to invoice the UFC, like Heidi Dean. Like, who can I send an invoice to these last 2 weeks? Aljamain and then Bilal, like my blood pressure is going out the roof.
I'm sure.
Okay, so let me get
Matt Sarah doesn't think we pay Longo enough. So,
moving on. Number one, the crypto Bitcoin bonuses that went out. 60 grand worth of Bitcoin that went to these fighters. Hamzat, number one with 30K. He had the Smash Bros. NFTs launched by Dozbrack, who had the art.
I took a picture of all those.
Don't you sell that, Hamzat. Don't you sell it.
Well, I did think it was interesting. Volk had the 20K and then Jan had a 10K bonus. You know, I think it's great. Why, if you're Jan, why do you want to have to convert your money to Russian money right now? Like, you just keep it in Bitcoin, right?
Good point. Absolutely.
Got to educate the folks. Marco Madsen, 12-0. in UFC at lightweight, 5-0 in the UFC. It's a step up. I don't know if he'll take it, but Gregor Gillespie versus Marco Madsen. I mean, does it get much better matchmaking?
That's a
than
cool
that?
Fight. That's a cool
like
fight.
Russia or something. You know, you do
Gregor Gillespie is probably one of my 10 closest friends on the roster. I just want to see him, you know, continue this. And Gregor, if you're listening, let's go, my man. Let's go.
Can you
get a fight?
Can you hook a fish, John? I've never seen you fish before. Friends with the greatest fisherman in MMA.
I have caught fish with my daughters in my backyard.
All right. I hope you didn't eat them.
I did not.
Okay, that's good. You stole my Volk to TKZ in the fourth round. I mean, to have the wherewithal to just be like, yo, like, are you good? Like, are you sure you want this ass whooping? Like, still?
Kenny, Volk's the most relaxed fighter in UFC history, man. You know, I mean, it's unbelievable, man. He's just like, let's go. It's just he's fucking real, man.
He's a stud. What a competitor. Yeah.
What else, Cody?
So I have a question for Kenny. Is Dern the only strawweight that could compete with Rose on the ground? I mean, Joanna versus Wei Li is now booked for UFC 275. Most of the division's locked up. I mean, are we talking about Dern maybe for a title in the next fight?
That would be interesting. I'm not sure if I'm on her team, I'm not sure I give her that right now. I'd like to see one or two more fights for her to develop. Like, Rose as a striker is a problem, you know, as far as her determining the range. I think McKenzie isn't ready for that. But yeah, I agree with you as far as, you know, can McKenzie submit someone like Rose Namajunas? Absolutely, she could submit anybody in that division. But I'd like to see her slow her roll a little bit. But this was a big confidence builder in that she's heading in the right direction with what she's been doing.
Yeah, she doesn't want a title fight right now, Cody, and Marina Rodriguez obviously beat her head-to-head, so I'm not sure she would leapfrog her, but there isn't an obvious matchup for her right now. Lemos and Andrade, I think if Andrade wins that main event against Lemos, you do Andrade Dern in a main event, and I think Mackenzie Dern, one or two more wins, and certainly you're talking about a title fight, I think, for her.
Well, and I don't think it's hyperbole to say she just went up with one of the most prolific female strikers on the roster. You know, Tisha Torres,
not a great matchup for her. Yeah, good point.
Fall River Zone. Last but not least, I retweeted it from the podcast tweet. If everyone could go and support Mike Malo's GoFundMe for his coach's daughter. It had a 50K goal. I think at the time of him fighting, it hadn't reached it, but now it's at almost 100K. It's like 97K. As of us going on here. So you love to see the community come together like that.
That's amazing. Good way to close out what has been an inspired episode of the Anakin Florian podcast. If you want to support Ray Longo, you can buy all of his merchandise at AnakinFlorianPodcast.com. AF10 or something like that. The promo code, I think, is on the website. You can go to millions.co if you want the One More Sleep merchandise. I know a lot of people asking on social media over the weekend. Ken Flo, are you done traveling for a little bit? PFL Challenger Series in the can or what?
I got a week off. Yeah, I got a little week off, and then the regular season starts on ESPN 2 in about 9-10 days, something like that.
And where is that in the world?
That we are going to be in Arlington, Texas.
Arlington, next Texas. Free event,
so should all right. be good.
Yeah. You can get me tickets or no?
Come on.
Ken Flo, are you kidding me? How many do you need? Eight on the floor.
Anytime.
Oh. All right. That's going to do it for us. Thank you to our guests, Ray Longo and Brian Petrie. And thanks to all the fans in Jacksonville, all the UFC fans who come up to me and ask about the podcast. It means a lot to Kenny, Cody, and everybody else that works so hard. Will Berger, our intern. Thank you, everybody, for putting this show together quickly here after UFC 273. We are back next Sunday in your life. With that, for Ken Flo, I'm John Anik. We'll talk to you then. Until next week, yo, fucking later. Ha.